often wondered, what if all of us in the world discovered that we were threatened by an outer a power from outer space, from another planet? Wouldn't we all of a sudden find that we didn't have any differences between us at all?
Welcome to the Freeman Perspective. I'm Freeman, and I have a great pleasure of having an awesome show for you this evening. Now, to see evil all around us is not enough. We must recognize why this evil is here. We must know what is the plan going on in order to circumvent disaster. Well, tonight I have a very special guest, Michael Tessarian. He was born in Ireland. He's an expert on the occult histories of Ireland and America, has made the deepest researches into a comparative mythologies of the world and his own country's ancient and mysterious Celtic traditions. His presentations on Atlantis, Lemuria, and the pre-Diluvian epoch have been acclaimed by veterans in the field of paranormal research. In the traditions of Comyns Beaumont, Ignatius Donnelly, Emmanuel Velikovsky, William Bronley, Barbara Marciniak, Lawrence Gardner, and Eric von Daniken, Michael considers the consequences to civilization of an extraterrestrial involvement and seeks to clarify many of the quandaries that other visitation experts have overlooked. His book clarifies the disinformation about Atlantis and the lost continents of prehistory. It concentrates on the orchestrated chaos of modern times and reveals how the political and military mechanizations of the present have their roots in the ancient past. As well as stating the problems, Michael also furnishes us with solutions to the moral and social predicaments that have beset humankind for millennia. Michael is a producer and presenter of six-part Origins of Oracles, Origins and Oracles, which delves into alternative history, forbidden mysteries, and secret knowledge. Hello, Michael. Are you there?
Freeman, yes, I am. Nice to be with you.
Yes, great to have you here tonight.
Thank you so much.
This is such important information.
Yes, it is. And it's, you know, very important that it starts to get out at this time. You know, as controversial as it is, I think people are ready for answers.
It seems that we are in an age of revelations.
Yes, we are, and, you know, it's very important to stay very focused and optimistic on that, because there's a lot of people in the research community, you know, who tend to take up more of a fear-based and pessimistic outlook, and that's absolutely not to happen. You know, that's wrong for several reasons, and one of the reasons is because we are now living in the time, you know, Lieutenant Colonel James Bogreitz has actually said it many times, that we are living in an age in which it's a time for solutions and it's time for answers. And it may be painful to have the whole truth brought out in front of us because, you know, like a strong light, we might first react against that light or turn away from it temporarily or even strike out at the holder of that light. But nevertheless, that light must shine, and that light is knowledge. And America needs to be ready right now for the truth, you know, in every area, not just politically, but also historically.
Yes. It is all around us. Right here, we're in the capital of Austin. And we have the usual esoteric symbols around us, where we have the clock tower as a phallus and the Capitol dome as a breast. But in between these two, we have a little clues to Atlantis, which we have our goddess, Columbia, standing as an angel right here on campus. And she's on a boat being drawn by fish people riding fish horses. Now, can you explain any of this symbolism that seems to be everywhere that we look?
That sounds actually very interesting. I didn't know that. That's in Austin you have that kind of symbolism?
Yes, Austin is a heavily magical city. We have the international headquarters of the OTO.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, Aleister Crowley's handwritten works are housed at UT at the Harry Ransom Center.
Yes, that I was aware of, and the symbol that you're talking about is similar to a statue that's actually in Belfast, in Ireland, where I'm from. There's something similar in the sense that there's imagery of the water, of the dolphins, of the fishes. I mean, there's nothing inherently negative in that symbol. There's really nothing inherently negative in any symbol. You know, I teach my audiences and always make it very clear that just like any kind of musical note or any kind of color, no symbol in itself is inherently negative. It's who's using it and what for. This always has to be borne in mind. Otherwise, we go down a completely wrong avenue. But yeah, the image that you're talking about sounds very astrological, in fact. I can certainly see Piscean energy there. Of course, we're in the age of Pisces, moving out of the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius. So there seems to be some sort of imagery there. In the sign of Pisces, there's some very important feminine constellations, you see, which are represented by goddesses like Cassiopeia and Andromeda. So a lot of these terrestrial images that you see are codes. They're metaphors. They're symbols. And, of course, it's very, very important, the attitude of the person who looks at it. Because, yes, there's the important reason as to who put it there and why. That always is, of course, the first interest in study, is to find out what is this stuff doing here. I mean, this is a question that, you know, was on my mind in London and Ireland, you know, looking at all the fountains and the beautiful buildings and all of the classical art. I mean, somebody has to suddenly ask a question, who built this? Yes. And why has all of this incredible esoterica coming out of the ancient world? But even more importantly is then once you start to discover that, you have to also then have a very clear attitude when you look at this stuff. Because again, if you're living under its shadow and you're living in fear and it's like, I don't want to know, that's sort of woo-woo or that sort of, you know, you have partial knowledge, then you're doing yourself a disservice. Right. You know, like what Graham Hancock is writing about and what Robert Bovall and what David Ovison in his great book, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, has gone into in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. There's scholars right in this country, right here, and in England, who are saying we have to bravely look around us, become aware of what's in your visible space. Because through Christianity and through a lot of false teachings, we have started to wonder about so much about what's after death and what's, you know, in the invisible realm, that in a way, we're not even aware of what's right in our own backyard from a point of view of occultism and metaphysics and spirituality.
Absolutely.
Or evil, as a matter of fact. My whole work focuses on the origins of evil and, you know, what kind of fraternities are up to what kind of things to control the human race. So even if that's your forte, find out what is going on in the commercials. Find out what is going on the billboards. Find out why the kids are so delinquent, you know, and find out what these statues and symbols mean. It's a fascinating subject.
Now, many of the Mason books that I have here say that they are descendants of Atlanteans.
No question. Yeah, people have, you know, especially in Ireland when I used to get into conversations with them about my book and how controversial it is and all this kind of thing. I was saying, look, I have not written a single thing that comes from my mind. I have merely written down what is in these ancient texts or what these Masonic individuals and fraternities and thinkers, what they themselves espouse. I may have connected a lot of, you know, clues, but a good proportion of what I have written is there for all eyes to see. It's from the sources. They're happy to tell you that every single political organization that exists today, whether it's democracy or tyranny or fascism or whatever, has its roots. Not just back in official historical times like Roman Empire, but before that into Babylon, and before that into Phoenicia, and before that into Sumeria, and right the way back into pre-Diluvian days, which of course if you're unfortunate enough to have to listen to what they tell you from official history, they don't even acknowledge that such times exist. They literally say that history just begins 10,000 years ago, of course, with pyramids and basket weaving and mathematics and the wheel and all sorts of incredible inventions just coming out of the blue. We're meant to believe it's just like magic. You wave a magic wand and suddenly you have pyramids all over the world, you have sunken cities, you know, you have remnants like you have in Ireland of beautiful temples, of constellational alignments, of immense culture,
yes,
like you have even here in South America, intricate rites and rituals, you know, amongst the Native American Indians, or in my case the Druids, you see, or the Celts. And all of this is just meant to have popped into view in overnight. You know,
right.
Total nonsense.
Right. Although there is no lead up to Egypt. We're stuck with this hidden history So where did you find Atlantis? Or not not its location, but how did you discover it? All I've ever come across was Critias, you know, some Platonic stuff.
Sure, there's a lot of scattered reports, obviously, in the books. I'm glad you asked that question, actually, because that is the central focus, really, of my work, and that is to look into the Celtic record. As you well know, as a lot of your audience will know, Zachariah Sitchin and William Bramley and many other great thinkers have been focusing inordinately on the Middle East, on Sumeria, on Babylon, and what those records have to say about, the continents of the pre-world, of the prehistoric world, and perhaps some cosmological events. But my work, I could never understand why it is that nobody has gone to the Celtic record, and yes, that means the Arthurian tradition, it does mean the goddess tradition, but it also means something a lot deeper. It means the actual Gaelic, ancient Gaelic mythologies. There are such things in Ireland as known as the mythological cycles, which have always been marginalized and shunted aside and, disputed and not given the attention that they deserve. But in these ancient books, in these ancient chronicles, is absolutely the clearest information, far surpassing what any people like Zachariah Sitchin found in the Babylonian record or the Sumerian record. Irish culture, Irish record is even the deepest and most elaborate archive, if you can read through the veil, you see, of fairy folklore, because we've been brought up for years to believe, oh, that's just fairy folklore, that's just old wives' tales, shouldn't pay it any mind. But we're in the post-Joseph Campbell, era right now, where we should have learned from great masters like that to be able to see behind these sort of folk tales and realize that there's something incredible there. Well, when you go to the Arthurian legends and to the even more ancient Gaelic legends, they're talking about, Freeman, they're talking about super weaponry, super technology, mental powers, all sorts of what they call magical powers, but we need to reread that and realize that this is high-tech power. They talk about the war of the gods, the coming of evil. They talk about the genetic hybridization of human beings. And then I'm sitting there wondering, how can I be one of the first people to ever notice this. Everyone's focus is on South America, on Sumeria, Babylon, perhaps. And here we have a tremendous canon of knowledge that's really gone untapped. So that was what my book was. It was to deal with Atlantis, but it was to really kind of focus on the Celtic tradition. You know, even in Ireland, still the historians know that Ireland, in England, Ireland was called the Fortunate Isles or the Blessed Isles. And the reason was is because they know that those two islands withstood the vast earth changes and deluges and floods. And even in their normal lore, they talk about that it's a Blessed Isles because it survived. You know, it's right in the heart of the Celtic tree of knowledge from that country that these cataclysms took place in very recent times, and that nobody can understand the world we're living in and the conflicts that we have and all of the different political machinations and the end game, like the Maya are talking about 2012. The Celtic record is very clear that unless you understand the ancient past and what happened in a blink of an eye ago, you're not going to make sense of the world that exists around you now. That's just a fact.
Now, Zachariah Sitchin likes to take things back 400,000, 500,000 years ago. You've brought it back to, 50,000 years ago. What is it that occurred that altered this planet so dramatically?
Well, obviously I have certain differences. My book focuses a lot on disinformation and clearing up disinformation. I know on a short radio show like this, we don't have time to go into all the details, but there are differences. I'm very worried about some of the dates that other scholars are giving because there's no credibility to that at all. If you read the greatest scientific scholars who are now also going along and admitting that there was cataclysms and there was enormous changes in the fossil record about 30 to 50,000 years ago. And I'm talking about people like Ellen and Dallaire from Oxford and Cambridge. I'm talking about Richard Milton, who was the correspondent or journalist for the Observer magazine in England. The top scientists are now absolutely convinced of their own findings that something immeasurable happened on this planet, not 450,000 years ago, but very briefly. Very recent time, about 30 to 40 to 50,000 years ago, this is when they're pinpointing the deluge and even possibly the pole shift. So this is also confirmed by the Celtic record, by the dates. There was a great scholar, you mentioned earlier in the introduction, of Emanuel Velikovsky.
Yeah.
Emanuel Velikovsky had worked this out, long before everybody else. He had gone to every single one of the ancient tribes, not just the Celtic people, but, you know, he had gone to the Ainu people of Japan and the Maori of New Zealand. You know, you name it, he had gone to them in the outer reaches of Zimbabwe, to any group, and he had got their timings. That means in their own lingo, in their own jargon, in their own mythology, he had found out when these ancient people say that these great earth cataclysms took place. And then he plotted them on an objective time chart, because he knew that because it appears that these different tribes are saying it all happened at different times, that scholars then, detractors, you know, people from the Royal Academy and the Royal Society, they go, oh, it's all nonsense. These people can't even date these cataclysms properly. Well, that's because some people, you know, we don't all have the same calendar in the world. Some people judge time by the moon, others by the sun. You know, some tribes will go by Venus and different ways. So Velikovsky put it on an objective time chart, and lo and behold, again, cataclysms were in very recent times, approximately, you know, 20 to 50,000 years ago. So there's a lot of evidence for this.
So there's a lot of third-dimensional evidence to the arrival of a superior race, be it in Egypt or Atlantis.
Definitely, definitely.
There's so much evidence. What is it that went on? How did these people come and seemingly now rule our planet?
Well, you know, my conjecture, again, verges a little bit. It does have to do with cataclysm in the heavens, in our solar system. But it's cataclysm that is not caused by any just careering comet that happened to be just passing by. My research into the Celtic legends and into I don't know if you know this, but, you know, my mother was Indian, so I'm Indian on one side. And through their lore and through their access to the, you know, the Puranas and the Vedas and what have you, through looking at all of these ancient works, it turns out that the gods that are spoken of in most of the legends of the world didn't come here by choice, that they were being pursued from their own planetary systems. And where they came from is not really a major concern for me. I think too much weight is put onto that, and it's a bit of a side issue for me. But the fact of the matter is that a coterie, a group of visitors, visited this earth about 50,000 years ago and came here not of their own free will, but they were being pursued from their own systems across the universe or across the galaxy, and came into our solar system not necessarily wanting to. And out of desperation to avoid their captors, they landed on a planet that was 15 times bigger than our Earth. It was called Tiamat, and it was a planet that existed between Mars and Jupiter that's no longer there. The actual the asteroid belt is the remains of this planet. And many people have, you know, questioned as to why that planet is destroyed. They do realize that the asteroid belt is the remains of a planetoid that was there. Well, that planet was destroyed in this conflict, in this war. It was humanoid destruction that brought it about. And the records are quite clear about this. There wasn't any careering comet or any, you know, broken meteor or anything like this. This was deliberate action. And that was what precipitated the flood, because this planet of Tiamat, as the records clearly show, was 15 times larger than our Earth and was made up entirely of oceans. And it was known in antiquity as the Second Sun. And it's the frozen cryogenic waters from this planet that actually entered into the Roche field and entered into our magnetic field and penetrated the atmosphere and fell as the 40 days of rain. Now, this might sound bizarre to a lot of people, but they need to do their homework and find out that there's absolute legitimacy for this, that there's bacteria in the ionosphere that could not have come from the Earth, and it's there. There's all sorts of anomalies in the ionosphere which have been covered up for years, not least the fact that there's a planet up there that once existed and is completely destroyed, and is debris poured into our Earth, creating the oceans of the Earth and creating untold havoc like the ancient people were talking about. And this group of visitors actually came to Earth and hid in the caves underneath the forests and underneath the Earth. They took refuge in these underground caves, very much in the same way as Erich von Däniken has labored for 25 years to show how our Earth is lined with these underground caves. And even Graham Hancock, you know, has pointed this out. David Icke has excellent references on the Hollow Earth. I have plenty of those in my book. And this is where these captors, for a time, until the Earth sort of came back to a semblance of normalcy, this is where they concealed themselves. And when they emerged, when these visitors from another planet emerged, it is then that they set themselves up on this vast continent of Appalachia that has since disappeared. And it's on the continent of Appalachia, which isn't far from Greenland, Iceland, England, Ireland. That is where they set up the capital city or shall we say, citadel site of Atlantis. So it's disinformation to say that Atlantis was a continent. It wasn't. This is another piece of disinformation. Atlantis was a citadel or city-state on a continent.
Right. Well, the third-dimensional aspects of this are one thing for sure, but this goes farther, because we definitely have some questions of the mystical and their use of magic,
right.
Kabbalism and whatnot.
Well, the ancients people, you know, it's been said that when a machine works perfectly, people think it's magic.
Yes.
So oftentimes, you know, our forefathers looking back, what was actually high science of the time appeared to be or came down as magic. But let us not forget that there was legitimate magical powers, third-dimensional powers in operation. All the times that we're talking about, that's clear. Yes, there was super weaponry. Yes, there was high advanced technology, no doubt about that. And as we're, you know, getting very sophisticated again in that kind of weaponry and that kind of science, that high-end science, we can look back and make more sense of the mythologies when they're talking about, you see, these lances and vimanas and great powers. But yes, you're right. Absolutely, there was also psychic power from the wizards and from the magicians. But the most important thing, see, our planet, I've discussed this with, you know, we've talked a lot about this with Richard Hoagland and others, and we all agree, anyone in the research community does agree, that this planet obviously has been visited by many beings, not just the group that I'm talking about, that I believe is the Nephilim, but obviously our planet has been visited by many different groups for their own best interests. The difference, and I go into this very much in the DVDs and in the book, the difference with the group that I'm talking about is that they chose to interfere, you see, with the population of the Earth. And from Atlantis, my book is dealing with the genetic manipulation of the human beings. And that is what the Garden of Eden story is a cover for. That's what a lot of the other mythologies of the world are a very brilliant cover for. Obviously, they've been tweaked, they've been changed, they've been corrupted by later corrupting influences, especially the Vatican. Has done a terrible work on all of these ancient mythologies, suppressing, butchering, and murdering. But the fact of the matter is that it is not in the modern scientists and the modern bastions of power in the world do not want us to know about this genetic hybridization program that is about 30 to 50,000 years ago. They do not want to explain to us how that splicing of our DNA and the crossing of this alien DNA with the human DNA is the absolute reason for not only man's schizophrenic nature, and when I mean that, I mean it in the true sense of the word, meaning that he is a bipolar being who has both a good and an evil side. Now, that fact, you know, as you said in your introduction, Freeman, so well, is the central issue of our times. Why is this phenomenon of evil in existence? We've had everyone from Gene Roddenberry to Rod Serling to top genetic scientists trying to answer it. We've had the greatest theologians from the time of, you know, Plato. I mean, nobody has come up with a proper answer. It's always put down to that man is just resolving this through time. There's nothing he can do about it. He's a butcher. He's a murderer. He's a sadist. He's an unjusted person. He's misogynist. He butchers the earth. He kills animals. He does untold damage to his own self. Right? He does untold damage to nature. He's literally like cutting the branch on which he sits himself. All of these things are just put down to, well, you know, it's Mother Nature's blunder. I guess we'll just work it out, you know, down the line. What nonsense.
Absolutely.
I tell my audiences that it is constant tinkering with the laws of nature that has brought this about.
Yes.
It's constant interference with the inviolable laws of nature that has brought man into the predicament he's in. It's not some Darwinian mistake that just we're all going to work it out in time and, you know, hopefully the church will suddenly come up with the answers. My God. We're bequeathing a world of mayhem and murder to our children because we do not know that very important thing, which is how evil came into the world. We've turned to the politicians, we've turned to the philosophers, we've turned to these theologians, and they've come up empty. They're, in many ways, as I say in my book, those institutions are the worst purveyors of evil that this world has ever had to endure.
Yes.
And we're looking to them to tell us the origins of evil?
Right.
It lies in a completely different record. It lies in the work of our ancient forefathers and the myths and legends of the world. That's where the answer lies, in the high poetry, in the words of the minstrels, in some great art, in fact. Yes, it's even in music, it's in art, but it's certainly in mythology. And that is where we need to open the books again, like Joseph Campbell did in his own way, we need to go even deeper than that. We need to open the books of the ancient mythologies of the world, of the Native American Indians, and really see that they're talking about the twin serpents. They're talking about, you know, this incredible fight, like the Arthurian legend. Anyone who's listening to this program who's familiar with the Arthurian legend knows about King Arthur's dream, where he saw the white dragon and the red dragon in perpetual conflict with one another, you know, fighting each other.
Yeah.
They're familiar with the twins motif of the dark twin and the light twin. That's what we're facing. And that is inside of us. And so naturally, if you're schizophrenic and bipolar inside and your thinking is all twisted, which it is in our world, naturally your societies will then be twisted, broken, fragmented, antithetical. And then the powers that be, these guys sitting at the top of the power pyramid, can easily then create endless more, you see, divisions, reds against the blues, you know, the gays for the straights,
right.
The black against the white, the Catholic against the Protestant, you know, the Jew against the Arab. My God, they can do that divide and rule strategy because man is already fundamentally divided within.
Right.
And we then play along with it and watch our sons get murdered on the fields of battle. And all sorts of other injustices take place on a daily level to us because man is himself fundamentally schizoid. And the schizoid man creates a schizogenic society. The schizoid man creates a paranoid society. The schizoid man creates politicians and puts them in power on the thrones of the world like you've got today in the White House. But it's not just now. When has it never been?
Right.
When have you ever had sanity in government? You never will because those beings, those stereotypes that you're putting on the thrones are the projection of our own sick consciousness, our own sick psyche, you see.
But we've also noticed that these are all members of the same secret society. Generally, most of them are Freemason, and they absolutely have an agenda, what they call the Great Work.
That's right.
So, you know, if you look at the space shuttles there, and they say the Columbian Endeavor to discover Atlantis, just reading the names of the space shuttles, what's really going on here?
Symbolic communication, my friend. This country, America, is what I refer to as symbolically illiterate.
Yes.
What these Masonic people, and of course there's many other fraternities as well, you know, we're not hammering lower-level Freemasonry, but what we're talking about is that these secret cabals on a very high level have understood something that cognitive scientists and linguists understand, and we need to understand it, and that is that language and words are an extremely recent, you know, development or form of communication in human terms. Symbolism is millennia old. So these hierarchs, because they're involved in various sort of what we might want to call satanic pacts, or their adversarial energies, they're our rivals in the great spiritual battle that we're fighting on this planet, they have, in that ritual, or in that rite, the great meta rite, the mega rite, you have to tell your enemy what you're doing. This is something in ritual. You know, we don't want to go into all the details, but the fact of the matter is that you have to tell the sheep that you're going to fleece and eat. That's this. You know, you have to tell the victim in some form that this is what his future is, and this is where the battle lines are drawn. But you don't have to do it in words. They are telling us every single day, and I get emails from all around America from people who, you know my work and are spotting this in their own locales now. And are becoming very symbol illiterate, and that is the key, you know, that's the key, Freeman, is symbolic literacy.
Yeah.
To use the right brain, to decode symbols properly, you know, we need to do 2-3 hour shows on that. We need to have TV shows on that. We need to, you know, like I'm doing, putting DVDs out on that subject, because it's absolutely crucial. Because these individuals are letting us know, they are telling us, but not in words. Yeah. They don't need to communicate to that frequency, they're working on a different frequency. And if you're not tuned to that frequency, well then you're missing the station.
Right.
This is somebody listening to us right now getting bad reception. That is what is happening. They are always telling us what's happening to us. We just don't know how to decode it. We don't have the cipher on this side. And the cipher is symbolism. So through these statues, through these names, especially the names, it's an incredibly elaborate procedure. And there's many scholars out there who are much more expert than I am at decoding it. But I've made a lifelong study of this symbolism. People can contact me and get material on it. They can visit my website and, you know, start getting into this incredible subject and educating their children. And I taught young children for 2 years this kind of symbolism using TV, not turning the TV off, turning it on. I used to bring it into the classroom and say, let's start watching this, but let's watch it, kids, with educated eyes. Let's notice the symbols that are being used. Let's look at the way that mothers and fathers and men and women are being portrayed to you. Let's decode it. Look at how light is being used on these TV commercials. Look at how color is being used. You know something? In under a couple of months, these kids transformed, right, from broken, sad, deficient, delinquent, I'm not interested, whatever type of generation, to thoroughly on the ball, you know, people. Highly educated, highly erudite, completely savvy about their data space and their mind space and their thought space, and aware of what billboards are meaning, and their parents were phoning up the school going, what on earth has happened? Our kids have totally changed. Yes, because instead of, you know, saying, you're broken, I used to, you know, project a message to the children that, hey, you're not broken. You're perfect. It's the system that's broken.
Yes.
It may even be your parents that are broken, but you ain't broken. So, you know, don't be punitive. Turn it off. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, I don't mind what kind of teacher. If you want to work corporate logos from head to foot, go ahead. All I'm saying is know what they mean.
Yes.
Educate yourself. And do you know something? I have found that kids are more than happy to do it. I find that they can even teach me. I find that they are so interested that, you know, there was a whole subculture going on here with them finding symbols and picking it up. And even, and you know what they were doing? Going home and telling their parents, don't buy me this product anymore, because I've learned in school that this is satanic. This is a Masonic, satanic symbol, and I don't want it. And the parents would go, but you eat this all the time, or you take this all the time, because, well, I don't want it anymore. I'm going to find another alternative.
Those are hard to find.
Yeah, that is what we got to do. We start with the young, you see, and yeah. We teach them correctly, because the old is too old. By the time you've passed, you know, in astrology, your Saturn return, you're probably so, you know, morbid in your thinking and so fixed and so overpressured by the big brother that you can't even think, because your time is taken away. You're a slave and you don't even have the mutability of thought anymore. We have to look to our children, because they're our healers. Whether you believe in the indigo children or you don't, it doesn't matter. The children are the healers and the redeemers of our world.
Absolutely.
But we have to sort of allow them to open their minds, because they're our salvation. We've murdered all the Gnostics. We've murdered all the shamans. We've murdered all the druids. We've murdered all the Wicca. So we don't really have too many colleagues and allies left to tell us how to live off the land, you see, and how to, you know, make the world better again. But the secret is in our children, because they're closer to the source than adults are. And they have many secrets in them that they don't even know that they have. So there's a whole element of that as well.
Now, what about these overlords, the Atlanteans that came to our planet? There are many who state that they have left. I personally don't feel that.
Right. That's absolutely brilliant to hear you say that, because, again, it's a big bone of contention, and I am extremely wary of those people. You know, again, like I say, my work focuses a lot on this kind of disinformation so that people can have the truth about these things. Absolutely ridiculous that this story that, you know, yes, you know, once upon a time, great beings came to our planet, then they buggered off somewhere else, and then they're all going to come back to save us from ourselves.
I saw Ra'el speak before Congress.
Right, yeah. Of course. It sounds lovely. See, it's beautiful, and you know why it sounds nice to most people? Because most people do not have the courage to get up and change their own lives. So they're always waiting for Flash Gordon, they're always waiting for Krishna, they're always waiting for Jesus, and they're always waiting for the Greys, and they'll wait for whoever it is to come in and say, fix me.
Right.
But the human race, that's not going to work. You know, Gene Roddenberry, Rod Serling, we've been taught, and it's a fact, the human race brought this problem amongst itself because its spiritual immunity was down. And just like any homeopathic doctor will counsel you when your physical immunity is down, you don't go and get your limbs hacked out, and you don't get your, you know, your organs extracted from you. You boost your own immune system in a certain particular way that's individual to the person. Well, that's exactly the same remedy that's going to save this earth from the viruses and the degeneracy that is on it. It is a simple homeopathic remedy. In the last chapter of my book, I go into what this means specifically about boosting the immune system of the earth, how that is done, what it implies. It's more of a Taoist, Zen, Yin, Bruce Lee type of philosophy in which you do not fight the same force with the weapons that it's given you, in other words. You see?
Yeah, yes.
It's a different approach to overcoming evil. But you're absolutely right. Anyone who is looking to say, oh, I can't wait until, you know, Flash Gordon descends from the skies to help us. This is this whole Hollywood, you know, projection of the male concept where people are thinking of themselves in wrong psychological terms of being weak, of being unempowered, of needing leaders. My God, it's giving our power away that's got us into this mess in the first place.
Yeah,
the Celtic tradition, Arthurian tradition, talks about a round table in which no one man is king, no one man is sovereign, no one man is some jack know-it-all. It's the coming together of all the soldiers, all the knights, all the people. You see, it's all the community, the true word. You hear the word community on the news every night. I don't even know why they're using the word. It's a complete misnomer. There's not a single place in this whole country of the United States where there's such a thing as community.
No.
It's a catchphrase. Go into your community and find out how the old people are shut away in these disgusting retirement homes where nobody even comes to visit them.
And you never see children playing anymore outside.
Of course not. They even take the benches away, even where there may have been benches for groups of... I was living in the Bay Area. I saw this with my own eyes, that even when they used to even have a little area, pathetic as it was, where some older people or younger people might, you know, come into... They take them away so that everyone is caught in their cars and caught in their houses and are kept divided. You know, the treatment... talismanic words. You know, it's the old Orwellian doublespeak, using terms like humanity and charity and philanthropy. All nonsense. All the money that is going to any of these things to do with the... hurricanes and devastations in the world, that's going straight into the pockets of the elite.
Yeah.
And it's going into the elite, pockets of their agenda, which is even worse.
Okay, well, let's get to why genocide. I love your theory on the colleges. Can we go ahead and jump
sure.
to D and all of that?
Well, you're jumping ahead, and that's great. My book obviously cannot cover everything that happened in the whole 11,000 years. I start in ancient times. I bring it up to the beginning of history. And then I jump to a most important and incredible moment in the history of the children of the Nephilim. Because, of course, the Nephilim, the offspring of the Nephilim rule the world. They are the elites behind the Tudor dynasty. They're the elites behind the governments and religious edifices today. But they have also not particularly liked it on our planet.
Yes.
And the end game involves them trying to, of course, get off. It turns out that that's very difficult. In the book, I explain how there's a shield around the earth. That it's known in the religious and ancient texts. It's an encircling barrier that prevents the children of the Nephilim from leaving. Now, this is a mythological anecdote, so it is obviously not going to be... It's going to come as a shock to a lot of people, but that's why nobody has gone beyond the moon. You can go to the moon, but you cannot go beyond it, not if you have the alien DNA. That is a preventative barrier to keep the earth in quarantine. That's why they talk about the beast being chained to the pit, and there's many other mythologies that talk about the internment on the earth. They don't mean in the earth necessarily, they mean on the earth itself being kept in a state of quarantine, quote-unquote, while we resolve these spiritual issues. Now, the end game, as they're showing you through their movies like Stargate, as they're showing you through the movies like Enemy of the State and many of these other films that are coming out, they're getting closer and closer and closer. They're trying to find the key to get out. They made great strides with this in the 15th century. And again, they use magic as a cover. A lot of times when people are reading ancient occult books from the 15th century and think they're reading about, you know, wizards and garrets and magical fraternities and all sorts of occult schools, they're not aware of what lies behind that. That behind Francis Bacon, behind Sir John Dee, behind Thomas Flood, and a lot of these other occultists, they were all working for the elite. They were all working for what was known as the invisible colleges to try and work on the Stargate problem, to try and break free. In fact, the silicon companies today, Genentech, SRI, MIT, they're still busy with it. Nothing has changed. They're still working on it. All of these think tanks and institutes, especially here in America, are carefully funded fronts for this exact kind of research to try and work with the silicon intelligence and the carbon in order to find the keys that will open the Stargate. Now, John Dee, for people who don't know, was one of the most important figures of medieval history. He was the astrologer to Queen Elizabeth I, and he was put in charge of this. He had the biggest collection of books in the world at that time. His house was on the Thames River. He was a master occultist, and he decided to open doorways, open spiritual portals to higher souls. So rather than just work with the human intelligence, he decided to go into his occult. He had many abilities with occult language and occult powers, and he opened what were called portals to oversouls. Now, these are not necessarily higher spiritual beings, but they are spiritual beings. They exist on higher planes. I know people find this difficult to understand, but think of the microbes. if somebody hadn't invented a microscope for you to see an entire ecostructure, an ecoculture of microbes, you would be taking people down and burning them if they said that there was a whole ecostructure of microscopic life forms. Now we know through a simple device like the microscope that such beings exist. Well, on the level above the human, there are what is called the macrobes. Now, in the pact with John Dee, the Tudor dynasty, and so forth and so on, with these macrobes said, yes, they do have a key. And that key of how to get free from this planet would take many hundreds of years for them to be able to even digest. For human intelligence to even put it into operation would take a very, very long time. And I go into this in the book. But that's not all. The macrobes don't work for free.
Yes.
Higher agencies don't work for free. And John Dee, you know, was basically in a situation of saying, well, what is it that you want in this pact? You're going to give me something, I have to give you something. And what they wanted was energy. Energy released from death. Ritual murder, it has to do with cortisol, it has to do with the spiritual and occult properties of blood, the release of fear, the release of confusion, toxicity. These ritual deaths, as I labor in the book to explain, and also in my DVD, we go into on the Atlantis DVD that's coming out in January, there's a lot of information on this, that these ritual killings have to be done extremely specifically, otherwise it doesn't qualify as a ritual death. That means that they have to be done at the right time, and I mean that astrologically speaking. They have to be done at the right place on the globe, and they have to be done, you know, there's other rules and regulations that go into these kinds of deaths. Wars, for instance, are ritual mass murders. The soldiers are covered in occult symbols, like the Pentagon in your country is an occult symbol. They're put out on certain parts of the globe. They'll fight one another and die in mass rituals under very ritualistic circumstances, by the way. And I mean that even for this latest Gulf War.
Yes.
In both Gulf Wars, there's been ritualistic, heavily. There's some people who specialize in this, that the troops are being asked to do some of the most weirdest things and dress in certain ways and perform in certain ways that are extremely bizarre. There's a ritual component very much to this war. That's why it's even in the Holy Land, in Iraq, which was the center of civilization. There's a reason why that positioning is being used. But all done through time. Richard Hoagland has done much work on this, talking about the 30 and the 33rd meridian of the earth. I've got a large section on that in my book about get to find out why most of the bombs of the world are dropped on the 30th and 33rd meridian of the earth, why most of the royal houses, why most of the churches and banks are all on this little part of the earth, why Kennedy's assassination and many other murders are done, why many what we call think of as serial killings have between 7 and 13 victims and are done on certain positions of the earth. All of this has to be explained now to the human race because this releases certain kinds of energy at certain kinds of time. And this is then used by higher energies in payment for this pact. And see, you talked about the cities. I discovered in my researches that cities, what we know as cities, that's a Latin word, are actually nothing more than ritual centers. So when you start talking to me earlier on about the design of use of Austin, my God, we're not talking just here about one statue, or if somebody's listening right now from, you know, St. Louis, or if somebody's listening from New York, we're not just talking about your famous one statue, we're talking about the entire layout of your city. Take a look. Go one day with educated eyes and look at the carvings and the mosaics. Or if you haven't got time to do that, just buy David Ovison's book, Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, and he'll do the work for you. He found 22 zodiacs secreted into the architecture of Washington, D.C., and hundreds of astrological and zodiological symbols. Now, why would that be? Why would men who are our founding fathers, pretending to be Christian, but we know now that they're, of course, very Masonic, why would these people who laugh and tell you that you can't be involved in divination and mysticism and that you shouldn't touch astrology and that's off limits to you, but they can go and design their entire cities and every ritual and everything that they do is based on it? If that isn't a divide and rule strategy, I don't know what is.
Yes.
So our cities are nothing more than ritual centers. Pick up the book, you know, my book, Atlantis, and you will find the information in there. Very, very important information. There's a chapter in that book called Serpents in the Streets. And people need to know about the streets and the houses and the design of cities. And there's a reason, there's an occult pattern. Because in normal satanic ritual, you take your victim to a particular ritual site. Well, listen, you can't take the whole human race, you know, perpetually to sacred sites for a ritual death. Better still, put them in it. Build it around them. They'll never know the difference. Murders and assassinations will be happening. Gangs and all sorts of nonsense will be happening. Strangest obelisks and the weirdest occult symbols will be right in plain view. Like Sherlock Holmes used to say, put it in plain view, nobody will see it. Absolutely, that is what has been done. And then we wonder why we're frustrated and why our lives aren't working the way we want and why our children are delinquent. My God, if we only knew the prison universe that we're in, prison planet, and then even the prison cities, we got to know our enemy here.
We're all busy helping them get off this planet.
Busy getting off the planet, exactly. We are the tools. And, you know, as my book says, I don't really like our fate too much, if and when, you know, because I have four outcomes, you know, in the book. I'm not sure they'll get off, but, you know, they may very well do. But in either, in any of the four instances that I outline in the book, we are in pretty much a bad state. We're in a bad state now. Nature's in a bad state now. Yeah. And we have more tyrannical governments. We have mass murder. Because man is toxic inside. You know, I have some free web stream of a talk that I did on this year going into the origins of evil on my website. So if people want to come to tarotscopes.com, they can actually view a very comprehensive talk. Because if people, you know, who are listening to this think that I'm missing out a lot of stuff or there's, you know, we're just jumping around, then by all means visit my website, listen to a more, you know, thorough treatment of this or get the book, and then you will find that this is not as radical or off the wall as it sounds. We need the truth, and we need it now, and that truth might not first be as we imagine it to be.
Yes, it takes hundreds of books to get
it. Really does. But see, my work is, I've tried to compress, you know, my work as much as possible so that it's it takes the best of other people's work, the best of the ancient, you know, work, the mythologies, the central issues, and presents it there. And for people who don't like books, you know, we got DVDs coming out on the same subject. I've got and it's 15 hours long, by the way. I'll send you a complimentary copy when they're done, Freeman, so you can enjoy it. But, you know, this treatment, like you said, it's a lot of material. On the DVD that I'm releasing is 15 hours long on Atlantis.
Wow.
Taking us from the ancient times right down to the, yeah, this stuff, I'm sorry, it cannot be covered, you know,
in an
hour-long DVD like most of the people are putting out today. We need the whole truth, and I've gone to great expense and labor to get this information out. People have seen the previews, they love it, and we're doing some fine work here to really bring the truth to people, because I stick by what I said in the first line of my book, and that is in the next 10 years, that means from 2000 to 2012, in that 12-year period, in that 10-year period, we are, as a human race, are going to find out, whether we like it or not, the absolute truth about our origins and destiny. That's going to happen.
Yes.
You know, so even though there may be a lot of backsliders now and a lot of people holding on to the old dead paradigms of the old Piscean age, you know, give it a few more years. In 2007, you're already going to see massive changes when the planet Pluto comes into alignment with galactic center. Then as we move to the Mayan end date, there's going to be even more people awakening to the light. They won't know how, they won't know when, but one way or the other. And you can already see it in the works of some great scholars, some amazing human beings. You know, I was just talking to Valdemar Valerian the other day, who wrote Matrix 5. You know, his website is truefacts.org, you know, the Leading Edge Group. He's just come out with another incredible book. You know, there's more books out there on this subject. Graham Hancock's Talisman, I recommend that book. I certainly recommend, you know, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. You know, and there's so many other fine works out there that make it easy, because we have to realize this. For hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, this power elite kept our fathers in a state of total illiteracy. A total feudal state of slavery, in which it was illegal for you to even travel 5 to 10 miles from your village. So today, people, you know, come to conferences, they email me, they read the book, and then they say, listen, how can some secret society just come in and take over? First of all, I didn't say that. What I'm talking about here is not just some secret society like some mafia coming in and taking over and ruling our lives. I'm talking about that these guys run the matrix of the world. These people have built our cities, they've created our schools, they created our institutions. When we were serfs in fields, couldn't even read, these people were billionaires. These people had profited from the pillage of the world, you know? These are the Nephilim, the descendants of the Nephilim we're talking about here. They created our farms, our villages. They created the lifestyles that our forefathers knew, who sweated in the mines and sweated in the fields and died wondering what the big mystery is. They gave us fake religion. They gave us no justice. You see?
Yes.
The appalling legacy of crimes. They've given us world wars, and then they tell us the next war is the war to end all wars. They've got us so turned around with doublespeak that we can't even tell when our leaders are leading us down to selling our sovereignty. You know, this country was strong and brave and upright 200 years ago. I'm from Ireland, you know, so I hate to say it. I hope I'm not offending anyone, but my God, what has happened?
Most of us listening here today agree.
You know, what has happened to you? You know, before you took the biggest tyrant that the world knew and you kicked his ass back into the Atlantic Ocean where he belonged, King George III and all his minions, a mere 3% of this country, told him where to go. And now, through decadence and yuppiness and apathy and everybody shivering under their bed in fear, you've got these petty tyrants, people who are not even worth anything. But they're ruling from above with their private institutions and private banks that even in your constitution says, to hell with it, it shouldn't exist. My God, what kind of travesty has happened? You know, and that's why there's a call to arms. We are being shot at.
Yes.
Our liberties are being taken away. There is no time to wait. You know, if you see a dangerous snake coming into your house to bite your children, you don't sit around and hum and ha and say, well, hold on, let me think about it. What's the rights of this snake? And let me get into the political pigsty and try something, you know, how to do it. You act.
Everybody wants to go back to the old ways. They're always talking about, you know, going back to the forefathers, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. But now all of these documents, I feel, were written by these secret societies.
Precisely.
Well, I know they were.
That's exactly right. And you see, as I said at the conference last year, somebody asked that exact question. And I said, look, if you don't have the moral constitution inside, what the hell does another document matter?
Yes.
You have to be a walking constitution. You have to have morality inside yourself. You have to be able to be connected to your source and have a clean, healthy psyche. Because if you're, you know, we clean everything in our world. We clean our driveways, our cars, our plates. We clean our beds, we clean our bodies, but we don't clean our emotions, we don't clean our psyche. So we're really in a bad state psychologically. And that's why we project these kinds of demagogues to rule over us. You're absolutely right. These Masonic guys knew that it's not going to be easy to get the people of the world from the old Europe over here to push the machine in America. So you're going to have to make some really glowing documents to make it all worthwhile. And people fell for it because situations in Ireland, like with the famine and the rest of the world, was so atrocious. It's the old dialectic. You make things so bad over there, and then you make things so attractive over here, and everyone will come over. And that's exactly what happened. But has anyone actually been free? Don't the Skull and Bones and the Russell Trust own every inch of this country from day one? What's free about America?
Nothing.
You turn a blind eye, and even with good presidents trying to prevent it, next thing you know, you have private banks on the soil of America. Next thing you have is duplicitous presidents like Roosevelt sending brothers to, you know, die in the fields of foreign wars on which he has no place being, when the country's a fledgling country which needs to stick to its own sovereignty and look to its own borders and strengthen itself. On the Webstream program that I have on my website, I talk about this, how the British government knew that when they had lost the war, you know, when they couldn't fight America through force of arms, that doesn't bother them. They've got 100 other strategies to come in and weaken the country. They sent other agents in surreptitiously, and the American people need to know about this to find out the war has never gone over. Here you have your president shaking hands with the you know, the Queen of England and with Blair.
Mm-hmm.
Who in history was America's greatest enemy that they should be now happy, you know, drooling at the mouth to be shaking the hands of the British? The British is America's greatest enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And all your presidents work for the City of London and the Freemasons of London. Not, they do not work for American people or American justice. They're here to sink their fangs into this country and rape it, because they knew that after America had won the War of Independence, the Tsar of Russia was looking favorably on America and was thinking very, very much so about turning his Russia, you see, basing it on the American model. That's absolutely historically documented fact. You can read this in the work of the greatest Russian scholars like Alex de Jong, that the Tsar was so impressed with what America was doing. They were admiring this country's model and were thinking of basing it on that. Other countries were thinking of doing the same. The French were thinking of doing it. Would you think that the British government and the Vatican who controlled the whole of South America with their false mind-control religion, could allow America to be a glowing example, you see, of how a human being should live? That maybe the Tsar of Russia might even base his new government? He was just about to free all the peasants and let them base his government on an American-style model. Do you think that they could let all the thousands of years of control just fold up overnight like that? No. So they then worked overtime to bring this country down, and it's taken 200 years for them to do it. They've done it gradually.
Yes.
In this specific way that I talk about on the Origins of Evil web stream. People need to go to that site, check that out, read about it, find out how your enemies are still in your midst through the Freemasons, people like Albert Pike, and other minions like that, and Roosevelt, and other Freemasons, people who have secret allegiances and agendas long before there are allegiances and agendas to the American people.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. I was wondering if you wanted to get more into 2012 and what we're looking at. What's tomorrow? You know, what are we looking
at? Well, that's the whole point. I've looked at this. I deal with it in my... I have a DVD coming out that will go thoroughly into this. It's called 2012, Where History Ends. It deals with the predictions. And if people, again, go to the website and look at the Origins of Evil web stream, there's a interesting information on this as well. For our show right now, all I can say is that it doesn't look that good because people are going to be challenged now by the truth. We've had about all the lies we can take, you see, in the world. And the human race is now going to be guided, motivated, whatever you want to look at it, to really freeing itself of these parasites that infect the body politic. And as we know, there can be a toxic time while that's happening. Anyone who's going through a true healing curve, you see, often has some toxic symptoms. This desert storm, these wars, these wars that are taking place in America, that America is getting embroiled in, this whole total fake manifestation of world terrorism. See, now we don't have a Reds to fight. We don't have the Cold War, so you better invent some other, you know, bogeyman.
Yeah.
So this whole fake bogeyman of world terrorism nonsense
yeah.
is all part of this. It's all part of this projection of our own inner discord. So in the next lot of years, I feel that that's going to happen even more until we really purge ourselves of this or people start taking personal responsibility. It's not as hard as it sounds. It's actually quite easy. I make this the theme of a lot of my work in the DVDs is to explain how to go about this, how to have a healthy, sovereign, you know, system. Forget political wrangling and the political pigsty created by these Masonic double-headed eagle people. We have legal empowerment that we can use. Of the systems, political and legal, you know, the legal system at least, it's not perfect, but it at least can be something that is much more powerful to us than the political system. So on a grassroots level, for people who are not into the occultism of what we're talking about, fine. Then empower yourself legally. Because is it not true that when the police are kicking down your door, giving you a ticket, or the IRS are taking you to court, they're not much bothered whether you're Republican or Democrat? When you see Big Brother coming to hassle you, they're not stopping to say, oh, please tell us, are you a Republican or are you a Democrat? Because that's going to mean all the matter. That's going to matter all in the world before we kick your door down.
Right.
So what's wrong with us? What's wrong with our brain? When has that ever saved anyone, you see, from being ruined? And yet we still, like monkeys, go and do the same thing every year. Instead of legally empowering ourselves, when Big Brother knocks on our door, they are legally empowered. The police, the judges, the courts, the IRS, whoever is our, you know, bugbear, whoever is the Frankenstein, the Goliath that's crushing your skull, those individuals do it through legal power. So when is the world going to wake up and realize, let's take a piece of that and use it against them? Forget the political pigsty, which has been created for us to burn our energies wastefully there. Left versus right. Get into the history of occult agendas and find out who the left and right are.
As
Jordan Maxwell has said many times, if you have a left wing of something and you have a right wing of something, it implies that there's a something in the middle. What is that thing in the middle, that ship of state that these two wings, you know, are beating towards? So, you know, I really tell you that there's going to be a detoxification process happening while we, again, restore our sanity. I do believe, I'm an optimist, I believe I wouldn't be doing the work I'm doing if I didn't believe that, you know, things are going to work out all right and the return of sanity will come. But there's a process to that. We need to get the poisons that have been slowly and subliminally infected into us. We need to flush that out of our systems. And that's going to take the next 10 years. That's what the Maya we're talking about. That's what these constellational alignments that are coming are helping to, you know, they're like catalysts.
Right.
They're going to help us to go there.
And step one is recognizing the problem.
Right.
And
now, if people want to contact me, they can do it by phone. Can I give that information out?
Absolutely.
Okay, it's 650. That's California, 650-223-3304. Or they can just visit the website. It's taroscopes.com. That's all one word. TAROSCOPES. Like scopes and tarot. One T, plural. Taroscopes.com. And my contact information is on there. And the phone number again is 650-223-3304. And we have a lot of other things to share, you know,
yes.
In book and DVD form, and put a lot of energy into this whole thing with the Celts, because the Celtic tradition is a very underrated archive of knowledge that contains immense secrets about the world of the past and the world of tomorrow.
Well, thank you, Michael. This has been a great show.
I'm glad. You know, I liked our talks before. You know, I hope we'll do it again.
Yes, we have to do this a few more times just to get to the root of things.
Well, it's good because, you know, as I said, this is a time for truth and it's a time for courage because the war perhaps today against these, you know, it's like Jordan Maxwell has said many times, okay, granted, it may not be actually with swords and dynamite like it used to be in the old days, but it certainly is with microphones, it certainly is with pens and paper, it certainly is with the internet, it certainly is with radio stations like this. Make no doubt about it, we are fighting in the war. It's just with different weapons, different tools, but it's a war of intellectual, you know, combat. That's what people must also remember. The days for, you know, fighting in gangs in the street and firing, you know, bows and arrows and, you know, and waving placards, that's not how it's to be done. This is a war of spiritual enlightenment, of light versus darkness, shall we say, you know, a spiritual fight. And many are the tools that are doing it. They're slightly different than the ones of old.
It all comes from within, eh?
Yeah.
Right on. Well, yeah. Thank you, man. We're running out of time.
No problem.
I hope we get to talk again. I will also be sending you a copy of my DVD and let you check out.
Right. We have to stay in contact because when my stuff is done, I'll definitely send you some. I have your email and your website on my site now. I'll put a link, you know, to your site.
I saw that.
Yeah, so we'll definitely stay, you know, in contact.
Awesome.
We should do this again, though.
Yes, we should. I'm glad that you say that because I really would love to have you back.
Well, I want to get into more of the 2012 stuff. You know, it's good to lay the foundations of what happened in the past, but there's a lot of if you go to my web stream and look at that Origins of Evil thing, I think you'll love it. There's a lot of key information about the future, and it's a little bit different than what a lot of these other New Agers are saying about 2012 and all of this stuff. You know, I have a different take on it.
Right. All right. I definitely will go watch that.
Okay, my friend. Take care. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Michael, and I will be in touch.
All right, bye-bye.